Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Vanguard Advice, no matter what your retirement goals are, they can help you get there and enjoy it for years to come. The financial journey is all yours, but you never have to take it alone. That's the value of ownership. Visit Vanguard.com and explore Vanguard Advice. All investing is subject to risk. Fund shareholders own the funds that own Vanguard. Services are provided by Vanguard Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor.
Okay, here's the match reaction for Everton 1, Leicester 1. Bloody hell. It must have been 94, 95 minutes when Richarlison scored that equaliser there. We'll take it. Terrible performance, big tonight in the main. But they kept at it. They kept going. And they got a point, which could prove to be massive. Absolutely massive at the end of the season, that. Frank Lampard is coming over now, applauding the fans. This team is going to kill me off, I swear. The heart rate must be through the roof. Richarlison is coming over to the Gladys seat end now. Giving a share to somebody in the crowd. Missed a couple of massive chances tonight. They could have potentially made it a bit easier for us, but that deflected goal just got us over the line to a point in the end. Come on. This team is just... they're not great, but at home there's just something about them. There's a little bit of something about them. They just they keep at it and keep going. And that's four points effectively being salvaged in two of the last three games at Goodison. And it's... yeah. I don't know what to make of them, but we're 4 points ahead of Burnley now. Same game play. They've got Southampton tomorrow. Obviously, we've got a Merseyside down at Loom at the weekend. But fuck me. I feel like my head's going to explode. The scenes in the end here when that went in. I mean, right behind where I sit, it took about... must have took about 10, 15 seconds to nestle in the bottom corner. Fair play to Leicester, thought they were well. Dr. Farn is a cracking player. Dewsbury Hall was excellent, but those toffees got a massive point. And what might that be worth in a month or so's time? Well, next time you hear me speak here, I'll be in the boozer with Mark Boozer, Keith Tomlin, and Matt Flusk. I don't know what you should think of that, but just, yeah, this team, what can you say about them? They're not very good, they've not got much quality, but here at Goodison Park, we've got a bit of bottle about them, so we'll get into the instant match reaction after this. we're back in the Denby Castle. I've got Keith Tomlin, Matt Flusk, and Mark Moosey with me. Been a while since the final whistle blew. Lads, should Everton have won, drew, or lost that game? I don't know. I think there's going to be a few disagreements around this table. Who wants to go first? Matt wants to go first?
Yeah. We should have lost that. 1,000,000%. We had no business getting a point or three from that game. We were dreadful, and they were on their game. That was a full strength Leicester side. As your guest earlier in the week said on the Blue Room Extra, they were always going to put a full strength side out tonight, best players of the weekend for the semi-final that they had. So, and they were reasonably okay for a, what, it's seventh, are they?
Yeah.
Still seventh. So, like, they played like a seventh-place side, and it was a world away from the Man United game in that these were not shite. So
yeah,
we had our work cut out for us from the first whistle, and they showed that within the 4 minutes that they scored. And to be honest, yeah, I mean, it was always going to take something stuffy and lucky. And I mean, we've had a couple of those. You said to me, Matt, on the way out, that our last five goals have been deflections or penalties. Like, that's the kind of luck you need if you're going to stay up in this league. And that's not the kind of goal that you score, and that's not the kind of result that you get at the end of a game if you are a relegation side. So I'll take it all day.
I think from a gameplay point of view, I don't think you can really make the argument that we were good value for a point, as you say. I found myself all frustration I had from the first half probably came with a massive undertone of jealousy, because they were incredibly comfortable and assured in possession, and it's everything that I think you could sense from the angst around Goodison Park. Yeah, we obviously concede nearly goal, which doesn't help this, but if a team want to come to Goodison and frustrate us and keep the crowd quiet and kind of nullify all of that positive feeling that we've built up over the last five games, you don't let us have a kick of the football, and that's exactly what they did. Incredibly comfortable at the back, and when they did get forward, they were relatively clinical. That said, if I'm looking back at the game now from a chance creation point of view, bar the goal that Leicester score and Everton trying their best at the moment to fall on their arse and give them a second, there wasn't really an overwhelming sense that Leicester were really pushing us, and that's it. Yeah, he had a relatively quiet game. Whereas I look at Everton and think, excluding the goal, we've probably created our two best chances of the last 6 to 10 games in Richarlison's header in the second half, and that thing that we won't speak about in the first half. I've got absolutely no idea what went on there, but I don't know what wins you football games, being comfortable in possession or creating good chances and putting them in the back of the net. And I think in the situation that we're in at the moment, we've been quite blessed in recent weeks that we have had, you know, good results coupled with good performances.
A lot of luck as well.
We have. Yeah. Not only our own, but certainly with other teams as well. I don't think we can realistically look at the next seven games and think we're going to play really well and we're going to get points in all of them and that's how we're going to stay in the league. We're occasionally going to be outplayed because we're 17th in the league and we're playing against the Brendan Rodgers side that are very well gelled, as we saw tonight. But we are going to create chances, and, you know, regardless of what your overriding argument is for the reason why Everton will stay in this league, I think a relatively popular one is the fact that Everton have got clinical attacking players, and when we create chances, we'll probably score more goals than the likes of Watford and Burnley. And yes, we could have had more tonight, but I guarantee that teams around us will be in similar situations with 3 or 4 minutes left of games and they'll get a half chance, but they won't have Richarlison, and that is hopefully what's going to be the difference for us.
I think going back to your starting point, Everton deserved nothing from that game tonight. And what's annoying is it was a very winnable game. Like, for me, Leicester weren't good tonight. Leicester were competent. They got an early goal and then they passed the ball around, and there was a worrying lack of fight and effort about Everton for 85 minutes tonight, in that, like, you saw against United, United weren't great, but at least seven or eight of the outfield players pressed every single ball. You can't say that tonight. Tonight it was maybe 3 or 4 players pressed non-stop from the start, and the others were hiding, the others were standing off, and that was evidenced in the fact that, like, from about 15 minutes in, they were passing the ball around the back and their fans were giving it all A's. And I don't think we kicked the ball for about 20 minutes. And that's not good enough. When you're in the position Everton Football Club are in at the moment, every single player in the blue shirt on that pitch has to be chasing every single ball, has to be fighting for every single... Even if you don't get it, you force the player to play it back. So be it. That's like, you take that. But their centre-halves had so much time on the ball to look up and pick a pass in midfield. And when we had the ball, their players were pressing our centre-halves, their players were pressing our defenders every single time. And they were forcing mistakes. A big thing for me tonight was a lot of players looked nervous on the ball. Whereas on Saturday past, they all wanted the ball, they all wanted to take the ball in because there was a positive thing going. Tonight we started off on a negative, and as a result, players didn't want the ball. For an example, Fabian Delph was hiding. He did not want to take the ball in the midfield. When he took the ball in the midfield, he played it off first time back to a centre-half, turned and ran up the pitch, didn't want it back. Same happened with Alan. Anthony Gordon stayed out on his wing. He didn't drop in looking for the ball like he normally does. Richarlison didn't press to the level that he pressed against United. Damari Gray, the less said about his performance tonight, the better. He was awful.
Is this what happens though when you've got a makeshift side? You know, I don't think anyone here isn't an acolyte for Brendan Rodgers by any means, but ultimately they're a team that have been together now for 4 years. They've had a lot of time to work together. You could see that in the way they pressed the ball, couldn't you? Whereas this Everton team at the moment is a hodgepodge of various players. Well, you know, our midfield at the moment is Iwobi, Alan and Delph. And if you went back even a couple of months ago and said that's going to be your starting midfield for a really important game against Leicester, people would have gone off the red, wouldn't they? And it feels like that's just sort of where we are at the moment.
I mean, I'll say Delph earned his start tonight on Saturday because he had a very good game against United. But tonight, it was straight back to the status quo that we've seen from him, in that, like, he just doesn't look interested when it's not going his way. He just doesn't want to know. He's not one of those that will get in and battle for everything. Alan was...
I think for Delph and Alan, you were about to go on to Alan, and I think that's up, because everything that you said about Delph, you could probably transfer straight over.
100%,
and I think they will, you know, and advancing time and age is absolutely not going to help this, but they will eternally struggle against players who've got a greater mobility than them. And unfortunately, most teams in the league have got someone like that. A team who hasn't got someone like that are Man United. And, you know, they're a side low on confidence who are happy to play a lot of sideways and backwards balls because of that. And if you want to play the game in front of people like Alan and Delph, then they'll swallow that up all day. The problem you see is when Dewsbury Hall breaks through the middle of the park, or Alan gets dragged over to the paddock in the second half and creates a cynical foul because he runs like he's running through treacle. And that's just... it's the epitome of why Everton are in the position that they are at the moment, in that the core of their team is weak. And, you know, we've talked endlessly about that particular area of the pitch for Everton, and it looks as though it's something that needs addressing in the summer yet again. But I think it's important what you said about the organised nature of Leicester's press. I didn't at any point see Everton's centre-halves getting, you know, aggressively charged down in a way that you'd expect someone like Jamie Vardy to do ordinarily, for example, or in the way that you saw Richarlison and Iwobi do. And I don't want to discredit their effort by calling it a headless chicken mentality, but it did get to that stage at times. Whereas, as you say, Leicester are well-drilled. You know, like all over Brendan Rodgers, when a manager's been there so long and been as successful as he has, the players know exactly what the blueprint of going away to Goodison Park is.
You know, just waited until we passed it to midfield and then he went in there.
The best way to put Everton under pressure is not to leg at them at 100 mile an hour. Sometimes it's to identify what players you're happy to have the ball, and then to allow them to have the ball, because Everton will find their own ways to put pressure on themselves, and that is what we are so capable of doing. But you know, it's talking about shooting ourselves in the foot. But yeah, that is for any team who've ever been to Goodison Park and had a successful afternoon, you use your game mind to know that is the way to break us down. And you know, we did shoot ourselves in the foot at times in possession, but it's the dangerous nature of what Everton have been doing in recent weeks is that we are so focused on intensity that, you know, there will be spells in every game where that works. You might get 5 minutes, you might get 95 minutes, and we've been blessed with that in recent weeks, but you're just going to have to hold your hands up if that's your mentality and say, well, at times we are not going to be able to replicate that minute by minute. And you know, Leicester, for my money in particular, in the first half played with a relatively dangerous level of freedom as far as Everton are concerned, because they've got nothing to play for, really. What a European qualification, yeah, you know, yes, it's important to them, but I raise you life-threatening relegation to that. But they look like a team who were willing to take the occasional risk, you know, play through the lines, as Keith said, someone like Fabian Delph for so many reasons, and Everton as a club for so many reasons, are not in a position to take those sorts of risks at the moment. And it's only when it gets to that do or die scenario where Everton simply have to throw everything at it that all of the aggression and all of the passion that we talk about suddenly seems to make sense. And you know, the last 20 minutes was absolutely the time for that today. But the interesting point for me is on the back of United and you know what, potentially on the back of hopefully still being 4 points clear with the game in hand after this weekend, are Everton able to have that fairly composed performance against a Crystal Palace or a Watford where they just consolidate all of the hard work that they've done against United and Leicester?
I think 4 points from those two games, you know, we all would have taken that one.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And do you know what, we looked at these, what, five games? You know, if we were to have won tonight, the five games that we've got, the doubleheader against Leicester, Chelsea, Liverpool and United, every one of us would have bitten your hand off for 6 points. And, you know, if we were able to get to that milestone tonight, fantastic. But we'd have all took four going into, you know, the loss on Sunday. And then trying to get an extra 2 or 3 points from that Chelsea and Leicester game, I don't look at Everton at the moment and think that that's not doable. And if we are to come out with the next three games with 3 points from it, I think we'd be a much better scenario than we ever thought we would be.
Yeah, it's Mark who scored that, was it 92nd or 93rd minute equaliser, and everyone seems really flat.
We've taken something tonight that we didn't deserve, and let's be honest, that point at the end of the day could be the difference between Everton existing as a football club in 5 years or Everton not, because that's how serious relegation is for Everton as a football club. Let's not beat about the bush here. If Everton go down with the way the finances are of the club, it's like 99% likely that they will go the way of a Portsmouth and a Sunderland and go down again within a couple of years. We don't have the finances to bounce straight back. We are not in a good way. Survival is essential for the future of Everton Football Club. So if that point today, if a scruffy deflected winner in the 92nd equaliser, sorry, in the 92nd minute, getting carried away with myself over how much I celebrated.
I want us to get carried away a little bit, yeah.
If that's the difference between Everton going down and staying up, then I'll celebrate that like a cup win, and I'm not ashamed to say it, because that's where we're at right now as a club. And like I went through Everton in the 90s, going through relegation battles, what, 2-3 times, two to end of the season, two last day of the season relegation battles. One in 99 where we probably should have gone down, 98, where Kevin Campbell,
put a year on your life.
Kevin Campbell dragged us. They've put about 5 years on my life today, honestly. Like, I was doing all right with grey hair until tonight, and it's just come like crawling right back through. So well done to Just For Men, because they're gonna get a fair investment off me for the rest of the season.
Maybe a great sponsor for us.
I think they would, yeah.
Anyone to do with hair and hair treatment.
Them.
Evertonian's hair's falling out, you know, it'd be amazing.
Them and, like, sertraline and, like, or any sort of any sort of antidepressant. Sponsor Everton, because, like, we need it. As a football club, you know, like, occasionally when you got an away game, like Palace, where Everton paid for the coaches, instead of that, Everton should be paying for counselling for their supporters for what they put us through.
Just for men. Vouchers with your season ticket.
Get a season ticket. A box of men. A 45-minute free counselling session. And some, like Matt said, they're like a diazepam. It's horrible, isn't it? Or, like...
Alperson, if you're listening, we'll have some of that. But I just wanted to finish off by speaking on to a couple of players. Matt, Richarlison missed two gilt-edged chances tonight, really, we're being brutally honest, but I think it would have been a bit horrible on him if we'd come off that pitch 1-0 and he'd been the one that missed the chances, because over the last few weeks he has been the one who's been mucking in, he's the one who's been trying, he's played across the front line. I think, like as Keith said, probably wasn't as endeavourous with his pressing tonight, but as much as the goals haven't been coming for him and the assists haven't been coming for him, he's the one that's really mucked in over the last few weeks, isn't he?
I felt for him, really. I was obviously frustrated in the moment with the misses, but like you say, he's the guy more than anyone else, maybe other than Tony Gordon, who will have dragged us across that line if we get across it. I can't fault him for that at all. And it just wasn't his night, basically. You know, he often, like you say, he didn't run around as much, but he didn't really throw any strops or nothing like that. And I mean, to be honest, he was quite lucky to stay on the pitch.
That was a bit of a dodgy challenge on Matheson.
Right underneath me there, and like everyone jumped up, and I was like, "Ah, fuck off!" And I just turned to my dad, and just went, "He'll be lucky to stay on here." He didn't look at the ball once.
Is that the one where he went charging over like a ball into the
it's right basically ball. A forearm in Madison.
Yeah. It was like he was jumping to win the header, but at no point did he look at the ball, at no point did he flick his neck. He just carried on with the momentum and just went clock.
It's James Maddison, so he absolutely deserves an elbow in the face.
Absolutely.
We're not condoning violence here on the Blue.
It was an act of class war, so it's perfectly fine. But
these are my opinions and not the opinions of the Blue Room as an institution. But James Maddison deserves smashing in the face at any possible opportunity.
On a football pitch where, you know, appropriate retribution by the authorities can be exacted. But
exactly, yeah. No, yeah. Don't just go up to him in the street and elbow him.
No.
But if you're ever on a football pitch with him and play 90 minutes of football against him, like, and the referee's not looking, have a dig, have a go.
I would never dig him in the street, because like most of the Leicester players, I probably couldn't pick him out of a lineup. They've got proper regen faces, haven't they, their whole team?
Oh, he just absolutely reeks of Love Island, doesn't he? He's just a generic Love Island character, James Maddison.
I don't know, I don't watch it.
Kieran Dewsbury Hall sounds like a wedding venue and a regen at the same time, doesn't it? Like,
absolutely, yeah. I think I've been thrown out of there before.
while we're going in on Leicester, while we're going fully in on Leicester...
Do I need to stop recording here?
Or? No. Can we just have a moment? Like, I'm not generalising every single Leicester City supporter, because I'm sure there's some nice fellas that follow Leicester, but them lot that were in the away end tonight were horrible. Like, how are you singing Feed the Scousers in April, right? How are you singing We'll Pay Your Benefits when Leicester has an 8% unemployment rate, which is 4% higher than the national average, when there is 25,000 children in Leicester in poverty and you're singing Feed the Scousers? What a horrible, vile bunch they are. And, like, genuinely, if you decide that poverty is banter at football, you don't deserve to be going to football matches. You need legging. And the ones around them should be calling it out. And it's the sort of thing, if I ever heard that sort of thing from an Everton crowd, like decrying poverty of an away, I'd be calling them out immediately and asking what they're playing at. But it's like a mob mentality in it, and you all just dive in, and it's vile, and it needs stopping.
Yeah. They're like, I mean, they're like that every year, and you know, we unfortunately get the finger pointed at us when we have a pop at Leicester fans of being jealous because they've won a couple of trophies in recent years.
Every club does it, doesn't it? We've seen it this week, haven't we, with both Manchester clubs and the Reds and the horrific things that have been going on on there. It's absolutely grim.
Oh, I'd expand it even beyond the serious point that Keith's made to the, you know, you haven't won a trophy since 1995, which is suddenly very important to them. And, you know, we don't need to, you know, we have contemplated enough about championship life to know that we don't need to hear your shit any more than we did tonight.
Oh, don't get me started on that.
So, double up for the occasions where Keith's head has fallen off in the spot.
Did you see last week when the whole City supporters did that on a corner? From which Cardiff immediately scored a header.
And some people want us to go down.
I'm just made up that the clappers got left at home tonight, to be fair. I didn't see any of them. So, you know, fair play for progress. But just
the what got left at home?
The clappers that they have at the
end.
But just to go back to the Richarlison point very quickly, was that the disappointment for me in terms of the chances that he missed was the fact that they're exactly the type of goals that I've been waiting for Richarlison to score. But just to go back to what we were saying about Richarlison earlier, I think the disappointing element of the chances that he missed for me tonight was that they were the types of opportunities that I've been waiting for Richarlison to score to prove that he's capable of being this central striking focal point that we're long. And, you know, regardless of what happens with Calvert-Lewin or regardless of what happens with Richarlison even, but if he's to come out with this notion that he wants to play centrally and be Everton's number nine and striker, etc., etc., they're unfortunately the type of bread and butter chances that your target man has to put away, isn't it? You know, tap-ins at the far post, headers in front of goal. I know that Richarlison can take a ball over the top and take a touch out of his feet and strike one in. He's more than capable of that, but, you know, I'm not going to put a lad down who clearly bleeds this football club and has scored his 50th goal for them tonight, but you forever want more from him because you know, you see how happy it makes him. As you said, he's the one player that we all feel the emotions that he feels when he misses a chance. He's the embodiment of us on the pitch, and I'm just made up that it was him tonight who got us a point.
Yeah, I mean, for all of the sort of comments that have been made about Dominic Calvert-Lewin's performances over the past few weeks, I thought Richarlison really suffered tonight for a lack of a strike partner until big Sally Rondo came on. And that was the moment when, like, he actually did start to move about. A few of the defenders got dragged around with Rondon. Rondon got a few headed flick-ons, and eventually he got that one scuff chance, which, you know, got us that point. So I think, I mean, the guy who was sat next to me kept saying that we should be playing Damari Gray up next to him just to have another body, which I thought was a bit of a mad left field shout, but just anyone really. I mean, if it's got to be Rondon, it's got to be Rondon, but he needs someone to play off the shoulder off, because that's when he makes his space, that's when he gets behind the defenders. When he's just two against one, they can just contain him. And we saw it all night. Like, Iwobi had a couple of times when he was trying to feed through balls to him, and he'd shape his body to make the pass, and before he could even get his foot on the ball, Richarlison had moved behind the defender, made his run, and the defender was just there just to intercept it straight away, because he was on his own and he was two against one. So he needs that strike partner, I think.
And just to finish off, one player they want to speak about, Vitaly Mykolenko, Keith. Looks very much at home now, doesn't he? You know, I think we've all sort of looked at him and early in his Everton career and thought, you know, he struggled a little bit, but last couple of games he's looked like a forever Premier League player, and given what's going on, obviously, away from the pitch, and 22 years old, replacing someone like Lugo Dean. He's literally got Ashley Cole and Leighton Baines working at the club with him. There's a lot of pressure on this lad, and it's taken him a little bit of time, but he finally looks like he's starting to deliver, doesn't he?
It was another very, very solid performance defensively from him tonight. First and foremost, like, he got forward well, and he offers a lot going forward, in that he's a body that drags a fullback out the way. Even if he doesn't receive the ball, even if he doesn't get a chance to put a cross in. I think, was it him that put the cross in, or was it Gordon that put the cross in that Richarlison missed earlier?
Gordon. Yeah, it was Gordon.
But he was up there, and he drags a man out of position to mark him. So he's energetic, he's energy level, he's very good getting forward. He gets straight back. He wins a lot of headers for a fullback as well. Like, balls up the line and throw-ins, he wins those headers very well. And I thought he looked very assured, and he looked very calm on the ball when he had it. He never panicked. There was a lot of players tonight panicked on the ball, didn't know what to do, and they found like the first quick, easy pass to get rid of the ball because they didn't want it. He took the ball in, he got his head up and he looked for the pass, and sometimes it didn't come off, but a lot of the time it did, and I've got a lot of time for that. And I think a lot of people have made snap decisions on him, and they've sort of decried him early as, oh, he's a ropey before, he's not going to be very good. What we need to bear in mind is he's a 22 year old lad. At the end of the day, that's not a very old footballer. Like, experience terms, it's his first 6 months in a new country. He's coming
not
to,
even that yet.
Not even that. He's coming to a team that's struggling at the bottom of the league. He's replaced a France international who, whatever you have to say about Luca Dean, was quite a solid player for Everton for the course of his career. He was dependable, and people have like expected him just to step in. He had a high price tag on him as well, and that puts a lot of pressure on a young player. Give him time, he'll come good. He looks like a decent footballer, and you can see that he wants to be involved, and he's tenacious,
isn't he? Like,
he's very, yeah. He fights for every ball. He's not one of them. He won't stand off a man. He won't let a man have loads of room to bring the ball down. He'll be right up behind him and pressuring him. Even if he doesn't throw a tackle in, he'll put his physical presence in there to make his winger do something with the ball, or he'll tackle him. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. And one thing I've noticed about him, and I don't know if any of you have picked up on this, is he does not dive into a tackle. I've not seen him yet throw himself into a sliding tackle that he couldn't win. He stands himself up until he knows that the ball's there to be won, and then he goes for it. And that's a very rare skill in a fullback, and you don't see it very often, especially in the younger ones, because they're all very keen and very passionate and they all throw themselves in. He reads the game quite well, and I think give him a bit of time, especially if we were to stay up this season, give him the pre-season and whatnot next year. He'll have the young lad in Nkunku behind him next season to learn from one of them. So there'll be less pressure on him that he has to play every week. I think we've got our hands on a very real footballer there if we give him the time and just have a bit of patience with him.
It's unfortunately an area of the pitch we've just been eternally spoiled with in our lifetime as Evertonians, really, haven't we? With a combination of Baines and Dean, who did very well there. I'll stand by that. For all of the reasons that I've just said and that you said earlier, Matt, in terms of the people that he's working with at the club, the expectation is absolutely there. But I think his main sense, as you both said, come defensively. The thing I like about him as a fullback is that there's a notable urgency to win the ball. I think if Leicester's centre-halves, for example, have got the ball tonight and they do try and find the right winger, he's right there on their first touch. And I think we've been a little bit passive this season, not only in that fullback region, but in particular in midfield as well, in terms of just letting opposition teams have that extra bit of time to pick their pass. And he is someone who absolutely doesn't do that. Obviously, the next dimension of his game to develop, certainly in this league, is not playing that simple ball inside, being a little bit less safe with his attack and play, potentially getting beyond the left winger at times, which I think, albeit with a bit of hesitancy, he looked to do, in particular in the first half. In and around that Gordon creating a chance for Richarlison, there was a good 5 or 10 minute spell there where Mikulenko was heavily involved in the build up play, looking to get to the byline, which is, again, not to draw constant comparisons, but something that Leighton Baines was very good at. He almost needs a blanket ban on playing that simple 5 yard ball inside and just asking him to do that little bit more with it. But for so many reasons at the moment, but most notably because he's come from a very dominant side in a fairly poor league to a pretty poor side in a league that he's going to be pretty much dominated every week, and that's just, throw the price tag and all of the other narrative away at the moment about this player. He's taken an enormous step up in his job, and it is going to take him a while to acclimatise, but he looks 10 times the player that I thought he would have been. Yeah. If we go back, you know, if we go back a few weeks and if I think about his debut that he made at Hull, and I spent the entire game making excuses for the lad, to be honest, because he looked like he was absolutely terrified of the ball being anywhere near him. You know, to think that he might be an integral part of not only this season but for future Everton seasons to come, I thought we were a lot of work away from saying that, so massive credit to him.
Yeah, fair dues to Vitaly Mykolenko, fair dues to Everton, stuck at it tonight, got a 1-1 draw, and it's a derby next, you know, straightforward.
Matt, that is completely unnecessary. We didn't need that. Why have you brought that up now? We're trying to have a nice night.
We're trying to, you know, we've got to cover all the bases. We can't pretend the game's not happening.
I was going to throw in a nice little point there. Here's to our first draw in over 4 months of football.
That is insane.
I mean, do you know what? That's really interesting, but it is important that we know how to draw games.
Yeah.
Because it does feel as though, you know, primarily because of the massive contrast between home and away performances, we are flipping a coin every time we go out on the pitch at the moment to see what Everton shows up.
If we draw two away games, then we're probably okay, aren't we now? Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
So, well, yeah, I'd rather we drew the away games than the home games, so that's by the by. What you said there, like, we can't pretend the derby isn't happening. That is exactly how I plan to approach the weekend. I am pretending it's not happening. I am taking the dog out for a big walk on the beach. I'm leaving my phone in the house. I am having absolutely nothing to do with it. And
well, don't be mental. Don't forget the Burnley game's on beforehand. You need to,
Watch Burnley. Burnley Wolves.
We all watch Burnley now.
Oh no, I'm not. I'm having nothing to do with that either. Absolutely nothing. Unless Everton are involved and it's not against Liverpool, I want nothing to do with football for the rest of the season.
If you want to go for a walk with Keith and his dog on the beach on Sunday, get in touch at the Blue Room EFC on Twitter. I'm sure there'll be a group of people who will quite happily go and do that.
Max is very friendly and he will appreciate, like, people who want to come for a, like, if you're feeling down about Everton, come and hug a dog. Do you know what I mean? It makes you feel a lot better. He's a very nice dog and he will appreciate your hugs. And let's be honest, it's better than watching Everton at the Tin Mine.
There we go. Dog therapy and the toffees. That's what we do here on the Blue Room. last gasp equaliser tonight for the Blues. We go on. There's six games to go. Seven games to go. We've got four away, three at Goodison. It's going to be a grim and dramatic ride to the finish. But cheers to Moose. Cheers to Matt. Cheers to Keith for joining us on that Instamatch reaction. Up those toffees. We'll speak to you again next time here on the Blue Room.
I think that's good to go.
Honestly, just lash that out there.
I'm sorry.
With the new Chevy Silverado, you might be driving in this. But with the Silverado's redesigned interior and large infotainment screens, it'll feel more like this. Introducing the new 2022 Chevy Silverado. Find new upgrades. Find new roads. Chevrolet.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.